Politics aside, being a woman is hard. When it comes to our ever-changing menstrual cycle, perimenopause, or menopause, we could use support. And that's where Happy Mammoth comes in. Remember that awful week before your period where you feel off and look in the mirror and don't recognize your reflection and you want to crawl out of your own skin? I don't. Estro Control by Happy Mammoth has made managing PMS symptoms so much easier. And for my friends who are going through menopause or perimenopause, or even if you've come out the other side and still feel like a wet sock on a busy highway, Hormone Harmony is a lifesaver. It's not just me saying this, it's become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media, and a bottle is sold every 24 seconds. The secret? Happy Mammoth uses only science-backed ingredients, including adaptogens, which help your body adapt to the stressors of hormonal changes. It's not just for menopause either. Any woman with hormonal imbalances can benefit. Imagine getting relief from hot flashes, night sweats, low moods, and poor sleep. And the best part? Feeling like yourself again. With over 17,000 reviews, this isn't just hype. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RAIN at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code RAIN for 15% off. It's never been easy for me to serve delicious, wholesome, homemade meals that are budget-friendly and kid-approved. At least, not until now. Gobble, my favorite meal prep kit, makes it so easy. All Gobble meal kits are designed by professional chefs and are pre-prepped. That means less work for you and less waste in your kitchen. Gobble meals include gourmet, chef-made ingredients that make cooking a breeze, from signature sauces and unique spice blends to compound butters, marinades, and reductions. With a huge range of weekly meals, Gobble makes it easy for families of all tastes and sizes to build a menu everyone will love. Childhood favorites, trending ingredients, and bold new flavors. There's always something to discover, so dinner is never boring. One of my favorite things is I can easily switch up my menu. Some days we go for family favorites, other days I'm on my own and can order lean and clean meals to ensure I hit my nutritional goals. Personally, I find Gobble to be so refreshing for a number of reasons. I'm a single mom with a teenage daughter, and we're not only trying to save money, but also reduce food waste, and she's learning how to cook. I don't want to send her off to college without the skills to feed herself, so Gobble has been the perfect way to learn new recipes and have her cook them herself. Not to mention, we have the perfect amount of ingredients for two meals, so we aren't wasting money by throwing out leftovers or buying more ingredients than we need.
See what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering our listeners a fantastic limited-time deal. Get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. Just go to gobble.com/therain. That's gobble.com/therain today. This offer is not available on their home site, so do not miss out. True Crime Fest Northwest is just a few weeks away, and you can get your tickets now at truecrimefestnorthwest.com. What can you expect from the inaugural event? On Friday, August 30th, attendees can check out the Expo Hall before enjoying a kickoff presentation and self-defense training from Rose City Self-Defense. On Saturday, you'll have another chance to get swag from your favorite podcasters and true crime creators in the Expo Hall. Presentations on Saturday include, but are not limited to, Desiree Young, who is Kyron Horman's mother, United Justice Group, which is family members of victims of accused serial killer Jesse Calhoun, our friends Sisters in Survival, a.k.a. Tiffany Edens and Danielle Tudor, the National Center for Victims of Crime, authors Lindsay Wade and Rebecca Morris, and some of your favorite podcasts like PNW Haunts and Homicides, A Hateful Homicide, Somewhere in the Pines, Snake River Killer, and of course, Murder in the Rain, among others. And those are just some of the scheduled appearances. Saturday night will also be the time for the VIP party. Sunday, the festivities continue with presentations, a drag bingo raffle fundraiser, and a VIP brunch. So get to truecrimefestnorthwest.com, use code RAIN10 for 10% off, and get your tickets today. And vendors, there's still time to sign up for a table. Visit TrueCrimeFestNorthwest.com and get your tickets now.
True Crime Fest Northwest.
This is Murder in the Rain, where each week Emily Rowney, Alicia Holland, and Josh McCullough tell true crime stories of the Pacific Northwest. Murder in the Rain contains graphic content. Listener discretion is advised. Everybody, with CrimeCon coming up in just a couple of weeks, we have some fun scheduling changes to inform you of. Speaking of which, if you still haven't picked up your passes for CrimeCon in Nashville starting May 31st, you still have time to do so, and you can get 10% off your purchase by using the code RAIN. Next week, we'll be back to our regular shows, first with Josh telling us the story of a police officer who was a hero during a mass casualty event, but would later come under fierce scrutiny after a home invasion that may have been staged. Then I'll be revisiting a very old case of mine, the massacre at Hell's Canyon, with new information. The week after that, we'll have our update where we'll talk about the largest poaching event in Oregon's history, meeting bears in the woods, the Jinx 2, and how Josh saved a life. This week, we're airing an episode which was originally posted to our Patreon. For those who aren't Patreon supporters, this will give you a taste of the additional content we offer. For only $1 a month, you will get ad-free episodes and a thank you on our Instagram. For $5 a month, you'll get both the ad-free episodes and the shout-out, in addition to our extra episodes and bonus content. Sometimes it's full episodes like today's. Other times, we answer questionnaires, shoot the poop, share bloopers that are too spicy for the regular feed, and our Beyond Belief-inspired deduce. And we'll also send you a sticker. The goodies only get better at the higher levels, including a shout-out on the show. Today's episode is called Strange Things Are Afoot at the Circle K. Unlike a regular episode, Patreon allows us to venture out of the Pacific Northwest, and in this case, I will be taking us to Naples, Florida, where 20 years ago, within just a couple of months of each other, two men disappeared. The men didn't have a lot in common, except they were both young, hardworking fathers. Another thing they had in common? The last time either of them were seen alive, they were being placed in the back of the same police officer's vehicle. Today, I'll be telling the stories of Terrence Williams and Philippe Santos, and the last man seen interacting with them, Corporal Stephen Calkins. For more information on this story, you can read the thorough articles on this case via CNN or NPR, which also has a podcast related to their stories and others called The Last Ride. Those links are available in the show notes. On the evening of January 11, 2004, 27-year-old Terrence Williams attended a party with some friends. On the morning of January 12th, Terrence was headed to his second job, one he had just started, at a nearby Pizza Hut. He never made it to work and has not been seen by family or friends since the party. The night of the party, Terrence had invited a friend to join him, but the friend declined. The next day, that same friend tried to return the many calls he had missed from Terrence. He didn't get an answer. After a couple of days, the friend called Marcia, Terrence's mother. She, too, hadn't heard from him, which was very unusual given their closeness. Marcia, Terrence's friends, and his roommate started to make phone calls. They began their search by calling local hospitals, morgues, mental health facilities, and jails. No one had seen Terrence or anyone matching his description. Marcia filed a missing person report with the police, but they dismissed it, telling her Terrence was an adult. He had the right to go wherever, whenever he wanted to. Marcia was undeterred. There are conflicting reports as to whether the police called Marcia or if she found out this next bit of information on her own. It's reported that Marcia then called a business that I had never thought to put on the list of emergency places to call, but I will be adding it, the junkyard. It was there that she finally found at least a sign of Terrence, his Cadillac. Her heart sank at the idea that he could be in the trunk. The tow company not only had the car, but the location of where it had been towed from. the Naples Memorial Gardens Cemetery, where it was reported to have been obstructing traffic. Marcia then called the cemetery to see if anyone there knew what had transpired. That was when she learned about a traffic stop.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the junkyard. What year was this?
2004.
I would have this assumption that nowadays, if a car goes to a junkyard, there is a record-keeping process for that because it is so fishy.
Yeah.
But that's an assumption, right? Like, that seems like a smart thing to do.
Oh, I've always had a fear of that. If I forgot to pay my parking, if I'm downtown or something and my car was gone, I wouldn't even know where to begin to start looking
for it. So I've done that, and I can tell you exactly what to do.
It was towed?
In 2000 to 2003, I had my car towed three times because I either parked where I wasn't supposed to, usually because I parked where I wasn't supposed to. One time, it was like a half an inch into the yellow line on the curb, and I was out of town in New York for Genesis, my vocal jazz group, and I came back to no car. So what you do is you call the police because you like report
it stolen.
They can tell you if it was towed because they have a database.
That's so wild that it doesn't just call the person.
I tell you what, it's terrible. And he went with me one time to go get my car. And they said, we're near the airport. We're driving around that fucking airport for hours. They meant the Troutdale Airport.
Oh, my God.
And then I had to make them open up after hours. I'm like, you motherfuckers are giving me my car. And I'm like, my daddy's on the phone. He's going to pay for it. It's like one of three times my dad's ever had to do that for me.
Oh, my God.
It was ever if my clutch went out or my car was towed, my dad would help me. But oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a real fiasco.
It's scary. But yeah, you can call the non-emergency police and they'll help you.
I've only had to do the call the emergency places in the middle of the night one time. And it just never would have crossed my mind. But now I'm glad to know it, because if I ever have to do that again, I hope I don't.
Yeah.
That would be a place to check in with.
But I do remember the first time I had to do it, I was straight panicked. Like, who would I?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know if it was
you
stolen.
You took my car.
If it was stolen, if it was towed. Ugh. It was so stupid.
That's awful.
Three times. I'm a real winner.
Has it been towed since?
No.
So you've learned your lesson. It's been over 20 years, for God's
sake. I also haven't locked my keys in my car. So I had AAA Unlimited because I locked my keys in my car probably, I don't know, 11 times in college. Because
yeah,
I really
liked doing that.
Well, because it was manual, you know, like there was no way. And my key was half broken. One was half broken in the door and one was half broken in the ignition. I should have just left the stump in the car. Like, what was I thinking?
The employees of the cemetery had been the witnesses Terrence, a young black man in Florida, had known to look for if he had ever encountered the police. The employees watched on as Terrence's Cadillac was stopped. He was asked to get out of the vehicle, and the responding officer got out of his. Terrence was pat down before being put in the back of the patrol car, and they drove away. It was also reported at least one employee saw someone move the Cadillac so it would become a blockage and need to be towed.
Ugh.
The keys were found thrown on the ground next to the car.
That's mean.
Yeah.
Been arrested. You're already getting put in the slammer, and then you're going to have to pay for your towed car? Rude.
It gets worse. The employees at the cemetery had one more bit of info. The arresting officer's name, Corporal Stephen Calkins. And it was Calkins who witnesses say came back and moved the car.
Oh.
When Marcia learned no one had heard from her son and he had missed his last three shifts at Pizza Hut, she took it upon herself to get answers from the sheriff's office. But they were far from cooperative. Calling in on January 15th, she was armed with the name of the stopping officer and the information about the stop. But everyone said, Steve? No way! And dismissed her again.
Okay, I have to ask, when they saw him come back to move the car, did he have the keys?
That's a good question. I didn't see anything about that.
I
don't know if they saw that or, yeah, he either had them or they were left
that
in the car.
That is spooky. I do not like this.
Yeah. As the days went by, so many friends and family members of Terrence were calling so often, it forced the sheriff's office to do something about it. An investigator went to Marcia's home to file the report. And this is the point of that conflicting information about the vehicle being in the junkyard, because some reports said the officer who came to the house at that time, that they were the one that had that information about the car. So either way, at some point, she found out about the car, called the cemetery, found out about the officer. After that conversation, and because of Marcia's persistence, a call was made from dispatch to Steve just to get basic info about the towed car since there wasn't any official report about Terrence or the Cadillac. 4 days after Terrence had last been seen at the cemetery, that call was made. Here's a snippet of it.
Yeah. I hate to bother you at home on your day off, but this woman's been bothering us all day. You tailed a car from Vanderbilt to 111th Monday, a Cadillac. Do you remember it?
No.
You picked it up at 1227. The large white Cadillac.
That's white Cadillac. I gotta look it up in my notes. I don't remember.
Are you sure there was no one with it?
No.
Marcia could not believe that a man who had been a police officer for 16 years could not remember what had transpired just 4 days prior. In case you aren't sure if you heard that right, Culkin said he forgot about the car, then remembered the car, but was sure no one had been there. Makes you wonder how many cars this guy is towing on a daily basis. Later that same day, another call was made to Steve. This time, he remembered a little bit more, like that Terrence had been there. Because his story was changing and everything was looking odd, to say the least, a week after those conversations, Steve found himself on the other side of the table at the sheriff's office, having to make a report about exactly what happened with Terrence. In the report, Culkins went from, "I found a car blocking traffic," to, "I found a Cadillac having troubles. I assisted the driver by taking him to a nearby convenience store, Circle K." He also claimed this all took place at 12:15 p.m. It appeared the real story of that morning was looking more like Terrence was making the 14-mile drive from his home to work so he could start his shift at Pizza Hut. Perhaps the tags on the Caddy were run and it was found that he did not have valid registration, so he was pulled over. Once stopped, Culkins learned Terrence did not have a valid license, registration, or insurance. At this time, the witnesses' accounts come into play. Those witnesses were the first of many cracks in Culkins' case. His report said that he saw the vehicle just after 12 p.m., but Terrence's shift started at 10 a.m., and he was only a few minutes away when he was stopped. Additionally, the three witnesses said the stop occurred between 9 and 10 a.m. On February 12th, Internal Affairs requested Culkins come in for an interview surrounding Terrence's disappearance. The interview went fine. He took a polygraph and passed. Based on that evidence and the lack of a motive, the investigation came to an end. Fed up, Marcia filed an official complaint. She had no idea that just a couple of months prior, a nearly identical complaint had been filed against Stephen Culkins. To get public support, Marcia sent a letter to the local newspaper editor. They published the letter, titled, "Please Help Me Find My Son." She had hoped the letter would provide tips or even the whereabouts of her son. So when the phone rang and it was the Mexican consulate calling, she held her breath, thinking they were going to say, "We've found your son," or maybe he was arrested in Mexico or in a hospital. But they weren't calling about Terrence at all. They were calling because they had seen her letter, and just a few months before, they had a family who went through the same scenario. On October 1st, 2003, just 3 months prior, 23-year-old Felipe Maximino Santos in Naples, Florida, experienced nearly the same thing. It was about 6:30 a.m. when Felipe and his two brothers were headed out to work at a construction job. Near a shopping center, their white Ford truck that he was driving collided with a Mazda Protege. It was unclear to witnesses who was at fault. The accident was nothing serious, barely any damage to the vehicles and no injuries to the parties. Because of their status as immigrants, the brothers approached the other party involved. They begged for no police presence and asked if they could just give her cash to pay for her repairs or claim. The woman refused and the police were called.
Bitch.
We all thought it.
I know. Just kidding, now, guys. Follow the rules.
But bitch. Now she has to live with this situation. The responding officer, Stephen Culkins, arrived at 6:55 a.m. As soon as he did, it was clear he was blaming Felipe for the accident. When his info was run, it was discovered that, like Terrence, he was driving without insurance or a license. He was also fined for careless driving, which led to the accident. The two brothers watched as Felipe was placed in the back of the police cruiser and driven away. Getting to their work site, the brothers informed their foreman of what had transpired. Hoping to help arrange the bail, the foreman called the county jail. There wouldn't be a need for the bail, as Felipe had never been arrested or brought in to be booked.
My God.
He was not in jail. When asked about the man he had picked up, Stephen Calkins claimed that, yes, he had picked him up at the accident and had even arrested him. But because he was so nice, Calkins decided to take him to the nearby Circle K so he could make a phone call about the accident.
Mm-hmm.
Just like with Terrence's case, there was no proof of Calkins doing so.
This guy's a real piece of shit.
In Felipe's case, one of his brothers filed a complaint with the sheriff's office on October 29th, just as Marcia would later do, part of which read, "Brother lost after badge 235 put him inside of patrol car. Felipe never got home." Whether or not there had been any kind of investigation, the office cleared Calkins. It would take the second complaint of the same behavior from Marcia to force the department to do some actual investigating.
You fucking kidding me? They're like, eh. Yeah. He's an adult. He left that.
He's an illegal immigrant.
Are you kidding me?
Who cares? In both cases, the women in these men's lives felt that something was wrong on those fateful mornings. On the day he disappeared, Felipe woke up feeling unwell. His fiance, who was still living in Mexico, tried to talk him into taking a day off. It wasn't going to be the worst thing he could do.
If only he had.
Nope. He powered through and went anyway. Terrence's mother woke up the day he went missing and prayed, which wasn't unusual for her, but she felt a need to. She felt as though something bad was coming her way. According to an undated memo regarding Felipe's arrest, Calkins wrote, "At the time, I placed Felipe under arrest for having no DL, driver's license, and put him in my back seat. I then decided not to take Santos to jail as he was being very polite and cooperative." Once he got to the Circle K, Calkins said, "I brought the driver outside and we talked and I issued him his citations and I gave him a copy of the crash report and I gave him back his car keys and I explained to him not to drive his car anymore until he could get a valid driver's license."
Was there proof of any of that? Like, don't they have a copy of the citation?
We'll get to that. Okay. Well, that's basically what he said that I'll explain.
Okay. Okay.
It appeared the drop-off at Circle K was Calkins' way of saying, "I'm not really arresting you, but I'm not going to leave you with your car so you can just illegally drive away." I guess because he was such a nice guy.
I mean, that is logical if that's what happened.
To a degree.
We know it's not. Also, wouldn't you be afraid you'd get in trouble at work for just like casually letting people go?
You'd think so.
Or do they have, is that, hey, any cops listening, which I doubt there are, let us know if it's up to you whether you arrest someone or if you have like strict rules about what you have to arrest for.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get to that too.
Oh, exciting.
Mm-hmm. As with Terrence, the Circle K is a baffling location, even for Calkins' fellow officers. From the original locations, and certainly from the Circle K, both men were just minutes from their work locations, which they were headed to. If Calkins was so concerned with helping them, why dump them off at an, ironically, inconvenient place without a vehicle instead of just taking them to work?
That was a good one.
Thank you. Additionally, in Felipe's case, his foreman had already been informed of the accident and the ensuing police issues, and he was on his way to the accident scene to give everybody a ride to work. So he did not need a ride anywhere. Just as with Terrence, when Felipe's family members did not hear from him, the calls of all of those emergency places began. His family had the additional worry about his status and thought he could have been picked up by ICE. Again, no one was in custody of Felipe, nor had they seen him. His last known location was the back seat of Calkins' patrol vehicle. The original complaint by Felipe's brother led to the decision to investigate Calkins. 3 weeks later, that investigation was underway and headed by Sergeant Doug Turner. Why that wasn't a conflict of interest, as Doug used to work as a patrol deputy with Calkins, is baffling.
Oh, my God.
Turner was surprised to be interviewing Calkins, as there had never been any complaints about him. The cleanliness of his record and the lack of complaints were well known. You know who else never had any complaints? Ted Bundy. The BTK.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just saying. That doesn't mean anything.
No, it does not. I don't have any complaints.
And look at you. You're
Beware.
Psychotic.
Just kidding. I've had plenty of complaints.
I was going to say, people complain about me all the time, so you know I'm not in trouble. This is what Sergeant Turner later told CNN about that process with Calkins. "I could not get Steve to engage me. And just whenever I asked him a question, he would go directly to the report and just start reading from the report or the memo that what he wrote. He was pretty much like reading from a book instead of just, you know, talking to me. Tell me in your own words what happened.
He's like, well, this is the source of truth.
Right.
Here's what I put in the report. This is it.
Right.
And then he doesn't have to worry about effing up his own story.
Yeah, the story doesn't change because I'm pulling from the source material. Yeah. And I think that was the frustration, because if it really happened that way, you should be able to just retell it. Frustrated and confused, Turner asked, why didn't you take him to jail? Why did you take him to the Circle K? He didn't get an answer, so he just had to think, maybe he just left. The he there being Felipe. Turner decided Calkins must have just been too burned out or lazy to have completed the correct paperwork at the time, like you were asking, the citation. So, in my opinion, if you feel someone's that burnt out to where they're not doing the job,
put them on leave.
Maybe they shouldn't have that job.
You just put them on leave.
Yeah,
take a little hiatus.
Take a little break.
A sabbatical.
Going over Calkins' record for the day of October 1st, it appeared he was leaving the accident scene at 7:35 a.m. From there, he claimed to have attended a meeting at the station for which there is no documentation or witnesses to prove that he was or wasn't there.
That is so bold.
After that short meeting, he was back on the road at 7:59 a.m. From then until 8:19, he claimed to have been doing extra patrol at an elementary school. The dispatcher who took that call later told CNN, quote, you can be gone as long as you want and nobody's going to question it and nobody's going to try to dispatch you either. So, yes, it's a convenient way to go off the grid.
Awesome.
At 8:53 a.m., Calkins claimed to have gone to a hospital regarding a young girl having a baby. That time is important as two witnesses to the crash, including one of Felipe's brothers, said that Calkins left the accident closer to 7 a.m., not 7:35. He was not seen again until the hospital, an hour and 48 minutes later, a block of time for which there is no account for. November 27th, nearly 2 months after Felipe was last seen with Calkins, a warrant was issued for Felipe's arrest for not appearing in court. That day was also when the final decision from the internal investigation came out. Captain Jim Williams looked through the information and concluded, quote, I can find no basis for linking Corporal Calkins with the alleged disappearance of Santos. I believe that Calkins' actions in this situation were reasonable, lawful, and proper.
What the fuck?
It was December 2nd when the internal investigation concluded that Calkins had not shown carelessness in duty performance and his investigation was officially closed. Cleared and back on the road, just a few weeks later, another man of color would disappear under his watch.
You gotta be shitting me.
No, not a third. This is Terrence. So this is after he's cleared from Santos officially. So they looked at him for the 2 months. And that's when Terrence goes missing.
Okay, I got confused there.
And yeah, I'm sorry. No. A month into Terrence's disappearance, his family was still seeking answers, and there were even hushed concerns within the department. So once again, Stephen Calkins was brought in for questioning. Explaining what happened to Terrence, Calkins provided a story, and he even had an audio recording. He claimed that on the morning of January 12th, he was near Garden Cemetery when a white Cadillac caught his eye. It, quote, appeared to be having some problems. Calkins then called his buddy, Corporal Dave Jolicoeur, to have the VIN from the car run. Amazingly, this cell phone convo from 20 years ago was recorded. I don't know that the audio was ever released to the public, but part of the transcript was. For some context, Terrence was a black man, and these two officers decided to use what would be described as an exaggerated black dialect. I won't be doing their accent, but I'm sure you can tell what it sounded like just by the verbiage they chose to use. Calkins, what the fuck are you doing? Jolicoeur, what are you doing, sucka? Calkins, well, I got a homie Cadillac on the side of the road here, signal 11, meaning abandoned vehicle, signal 52, nobody around. Jolicoeur, all right. Calkins, the tag comes back to nothing. It's a big old white piece of junk Cadillac. I'm towing it. Jolicoeur, you tow it, baby. Give me the VIN number. Calkins reads the VIN, then says, it's going to come back to one of the brothers in Fort Myers. He was then told there was no registration connected to that VIN, and he responded with, that's a hell of a deal. Jolicoeur, it's a Holmes car. Now, based on how that's spelled, I'm not sure if he's saying it's Holmes or homies, something like that. Calkins, we just drive it, man. Jolicoeur, we don't follow no rules, sucka. Calkins, we just be driving it. Maybe he's out there in the cemetery. He'll come back and his car will be gone.
Wow.
After being busted with their racist antics, Jolicoeur said the two of them had a long-running joke of talking like characters from the Clint Eastwood Make My Day, Dirty Harry film, sudden impact. Here's the scene that inspired the way they spoke to each other. They must have thought it was hilarious, and it exemplified the cowboy extremism they strived for.
Quick! Move!
You coming with me, Mom? We're gonna have us a little party, huh?
What you doing, you pig-head sucker?
Well, we're not just gonna let you walk out of here.
Who's we, sucker?
Smith and Wesson and me.
At the end of that ridiculous exchange, Calkins continued with his account, saying Terrence asked, quote, for a ride so he would not lose his job, and that it was just up to the Circle K at Wiggins Pass Road, which is weird for two reasons. First, like I said, why wouldn't you drop him at work if you dropped him anywhere? Two, now someone is at the vehicle? Remember in his first report and his conversation with Jolicoeur, he found the car blocking traffic. Now he's given the driver a ride? Just like with Felipe, Calkins claimed that he had been moved by the young man, and instead of arresting him or leaving him where he was with a warning, he was feeling forgiving. As for why Calkins was willing to forgive driving infractions, he said Terrence, quote, was very clean cut. That's one of the reasons I helped him. Heck. Outside of his long dreadlocks, I mean, he seemed to be a very clean young man and very respectful of me and very well spoken. Calkin said it was while they were en route to Circle K that he began talking about the expired tags. But why wouldn't that have been brought up earlier as a reason for stopping him, searching him, or putting him in the car? Given that Terrence knew to have witnesses if cops were around, he probably knew the unspoken rule of not asking questions or pushing back too hard, especially somewhere as isolated as a cemetery. According to Calkins, after letting Terrence out at the convenience store, he was told that the registration was in the car in the glove compartment. So back Calkins went to the car, leaving Terrence behind. Once he returned to the Cadillac, the glove compartment was void of any registration. For Calkins, this was a case of, quote, bing, bang, boom. I gave the kid a ride and he duped me, obviously. Thinking Terrence was still at the store for some reason, Calkins claimed to have then called the Circle K to confront Terrence about the lack of documents. I would guess in this window is when he went to move the car, is an assumption. I don't have a timeline. That's just a guess. If he's saying he went back, that might be to cover that action. Calkins said, I now phoned the Circle K and asked for Terrence, and the clerk that answered the phone said she did not know any Terrence. I now felt that Terrence had deceived me. I now called for a wrecker, thinking that the Cadillac was now abandoned and maybe even stolen. After Coastland Towing removed the car, I went back to Circle K and the surrounding area to search for Terrence, but I could not locate him. By the way, his car was not stolen. He had very recently purchased it. Investigators checked Calkins' phone history, and there was no evidence he had called Circle K. Calkins was now under a second investigation. Once an investigation was opened regarding the double disappearance, searches were arranged. They went through neighboring wooded areas and bodies of water. Calkins' car, where the men had last been, was forensically inspected, especially the trunk. There was no sign either man had been in the car, let alone injured inside of it. A tracker was put on Calkins' car. An investigator said, I'm comfortable saying that we went over his patrol area. We went over areas that one could reach in that period of time. We dragged lakes. We examined every possible place that he could have reached and gotten to the hospital. The hospital being where Calkins claimed to have ended up after that block of time.
As if anything he said could be believed.
Exactly. As if he wouldn't have left an expected route. As if he wouldn't know secret places to go.
And how to clean up after himself.
Do you have any intel on the strange draw the Circle K had for this person?
There wasn't. And I don't know if it...
His favorite coffee. They have great coffee.
Yeah, maybe he was just going to get a snack.
Yeah, they're actually pretty good. They're the one place that they have like all the flavors of creamer. They have a cocoa machine, a latte machine. Like, it's a great...
They do go all out.
They have a lot of options.
I don't know if I've ever been in a Circle K, but I was just looking to see if there was something that people talked about the Circle K.
The only thing I could think, because there are...
It's 24 hour too.
Yeah. So the thing is, it's two different Circle K locations. It wasn't the same one that he took them to.
So he was just a fan of...
I think he knew where they were. If you're a cop, you know where to get donuts and coffee. And they are probably around a lot more than up here in the Northwest, because we're talking Florida. So maybe they're on every corner. So it's just the go-to place.
Across from my college, and I hit it up all the time. My friend Austin worked there, so I'd get my free coffee.
As with Felipe, there is a chunk of time on the day Calkins took Terrence that is unaccounted for. From 1:01 p.m. until 1:54 p.m., no paperwork or dispatch trail shows where he could have been. Even worse, depending on how much of a liar Calkins is, that window of time might have been much larger. It ends at 1:54 p.m. because Calkins called in a stop. After claiming to have written a citation, he was leaving the area at 2:18 p.m. There was another stop he claimed to have done earlier that morning as well. Though plates were called in on both stops, there was no documentation of a citation being given on either occasion. His last ticket, before Terrence went missing, was 5 days prior. The tickets he claimed to have issued have never been turned in or accounted for. This means that he could have very well just made them up, giving him even more time off the grid. An additional red flag about these tickets is that Calkins was not known for writing many of them. In the year before the men disappeared, he only wrote about 12. Yet, on the day Terrence was in his car, he happened to have written 2 on the same day. As with the first investigation, Calkins took a polygraph test. This time he failed, especially when asked about Terrence's birthday. Terrence did have a history with the police, so besides seeking witnesses, he had another trick up his sleeve, a fake birthday. As investigators looked through everything connected to Calkins and Terrence, they saw that the call about the abandoned car at the cemetery came in at about 1 p.m. There was no mention of a person being present. But just 12 minutes later, Calkins called dispatch to have them run a warrant check on a Terrence D. Williams, birthday 4-1-75, April Fool's Day. The reason this matters so much and was alarming to investigators is because that is not Terrence's real birthday. It was the date he used when speaking to cops. If Calkins had stumbled upon Terrence's ID, say it was left behind in the car, he would have had the real date. This meant Calkins was speaking with Terrence, who was giving him that date. When confronted with his growing list of contradictions and lies, Calkins told investigators, "The entire incident with Williams had been so routine, so trivial, that he just did not remember the kind of things we keep asking." That was an investigator saying that that's how he dismissed it. Like, oh, that was just a run-of-the-mill thing. How could I remember these details? Questions around these concerns were presented to Calkins via Sergeant Mike Koval, who was part of the internal investigation. He retold portions of the interview to CNN. Koval, you only know that this guy is Terrence. There is no paperwork in the car. It doesn't come back registered, but now when you call, you've got his first name, Terrence D. Williams, and you've got his date of birth. Where did you get it? Because the date of birth you gave, absolutely no one knows but Terrence. Calkins responded with a humph. Oh. Koval, it's on absolutely no documentation anywhere. So 13 minutes after the car's towed and you go back to looking for Terrence, you now have all this information. My question is, where did you get it? Calkins, where did I get that date of birth? Koval continued with the questioning, which was met with Calkins saying, oh, brother, I'm all confused again. That's a quote from a grown man who's been in law enforcement for 16 years. Golly jeeper, my mind is just... And again, I will say, if you're that easily confused about facts and information and you're that forgetful, maybe this just is not the job for you. During another interview with Corporal Scott Walters, there were even more inconsistencies. Corporal Walters told Calkins, every time we ask you a question, we have to go back and get clarification. And every time we go back and get clarification, it makes it look like you're trying to hide something. And if you're trying to hide this, what else are you trying to hide? Do we got a body laying around in the sticks somewhere that we don't know about? He did not get a response. Calkins laughed. Walters, I mean, are we going to be clearing? Are we going to be widening Immokalee Road down through Wiggins Pass someday and all of a sudden find out that we got a dead body out there like they keep digging all those dead bodies up out there?
Oh my God.
Calkins just laughed. Walters brought up Immokalee Road as that was where Calkins was first stationed for patrols when he had begun his career. Back to that failed polygraph. It was the questions, was Terrence with you when you ran his 4175 DOB over your Nextel? And after you dropped Terrence at the Circle K, did you have any further contact with him that elicited the strongest failed responses? The investigation pressed on. A few months later, Calkins was asked if he felt upset during the stop. Calkins said, A little bit, yes. Asked if he raised his voice, he said, a little, a little. He also made it clear he was sick of the revolving door of the judicial system. Here he was, ticketing yet another driver without insurance, without registration, and before he could even file his report about a citation, they would be on their way to continue breaking the law. Besides the birthdate mystery, there was another glaring error that pointed the finger at Calkins. Signatures. After the fender bender involving Felipe, Calkins claimed to have given him three traffic citations. On one, the signature of the violator, which would have been Felipe, his middle name is spelled Maximo. On another, the middle name is Medino. Felipe's middle name is Maximino. An additional concern came when those signatures were compared with one of Felipe's from an ID card, and it was not even close to the same. The samples were given to a handwriting expert who compared them to Calkins. They were not a match. This started the theory that Calkins had not been working alone, though there is no evidence to prove that. The birthdate and signatures were the big fish in the pond of suspicion, but there were plenty of smaller statements or accounts that had Terrence's family calling bullshit. One was that even though Terrence would have been running late for work after being pulled over, he never would have asked a cop for a ride. His mother said this because, quote, he can't stand them. So no matter how much Calkins told investigators that, quote, he was now late for work and he asked me if I could please give him a ride, or asked me again for a ride so that he would not lose his job and that it was just up to the Circle K at Wiggins Pass Road, Marcia knew that never would have been the case. Another glaring issue was the claim that Terrence had been stopped in the road not because he was pulled over, but because he was having car trouble. Terrence had just purchased the car. It wasn't new, but both his mother and stepfather knew that it didn't have any issues. When they went to the junkyard to get it, they just drove it home without any problems. Another small detail, one of the witnesses at the cemetery watched as Calkins put Terrence in the car and drove away. Then 8 days later, Calkins himself went to the cemetery to ask if anyone had seen Terrence or knew of his disappearance. That employee said, it still bugs me to this day because I feel like he got away with something. We all thought he had taken him somewhere to never be seen again. One of the more shocking pieces of information CNN's investigation team found was that in August of 2001, for reasons unknown, Calkins stopped making arrests. For 3 years after that, he was still working patrol, but there was never a documented official arrest. He did some of his work, like filing incident reports, nearly 400 of them, but he never brought anyone in to be booked again. Even without making arrests, he was supposedly meeting the standards of his supervisors. Somehow, the news of him not making arrests was surprising to the former sheriff, Don Hunter, who told CNN, "This is the first I've heard of it. I don't have an explanation for you. I'm surprised, yes." It was in that window of non-arrests when Calkins stopped Felipe and Terrence, two men who, for what they were being charged with, could and should have been arrested. Fellow officers were interviewed and asked if they felt Steve and Calkins could have had something to do with the disappearances. Many of those questioned claimed that there had been a sighting of Terrence in East Naples. Calkins agreed with that, saying, "I think he's down there, sneaking around in drag or something."
Oh my God.
So basically, every officer they spoke to all referred back to, oh, didn't someone call and say they saw that guy?
Of course they did.
Yeah, so someone had decided to, hey, let's say he's in East Naples. We'll leave it at that. The sheriff, Don Hunter, eventually had to acknowledge what was going on, so he released a statement. In it, he brought up that both men had legal issues, so obviously, quote, these men may therefore be purposefully avoiding being found by law enforcement. It didn't matter to the sheriff that Felipe had a young daughter in Mexico who he was working hard to send money to, or that Terrence's young son was living with his mother. They were close and they talked daily, they played games together, went shopping. Terrence would often cut his son's hair as his dream was to own a barbershop of his own. The investigations eventually closed, clearing Calkins of wrongdoing, at least on a professional level. He was, however, fired from the sheriff's department for noncompliance with rules, regulations on truthfulness, and conduct unbecoming of an officer. In 2009, the state of Florida declared Terrence Williams legally dead. The case of the missing men has only had more attention on it through the years. As time has passed, it has become evident the initial disappearances stayed quiet because it was a white officer arresting, or at least placing into his patrol car, men of color. It would take the conversations surrounding missing white woman syndrome to bring attention to their stories. And it took lawyer Ben Crump and media mogul Tyler Perry offering their services, resources, and money to really gain traction over the last decade. Tyler Perry first offered $100,000, then $200,000 of his own money for information that leads to an arrest, a reward that still stands. Lawyer Ben Crump, who gained fame working with Trayvon Martin's family in the case against George Zimmerman, also joined the fight. Mr. Crump and his team were ready to move forward with Marcia's wrongful death lawsuit against Calkins in 2018. It was going to be trial by jury, but eventually the pandemic hit, and because of closures, his team claims there was a miscommunication and their motion was not filed in time. Because of that mistake, the case was sent to an arbitrator. They decided that Calkins was not responsible. So instead of heading to a courtroom to air all of the evidence, the family was dismissed and they can no longer pursue Calkins in any other manner.
Fuck that.
They will only see him in court if he faces criminal charges that can be federal or state level. Adding salt to the wound, the missed paperwork cost Marcia $5,600, which Ben and his company better have paid. Maybe that day in court will come, as the arbitrator did say, the facts circumstantially establish Calkins intentionally murdered or otherwise caused the death of Terrence D. Williams. So it's crazy that they can say we're dismissing the case because the proof isn't there, while also saying he obviously did something.
Ugh, that's because circumstantial evidence.
I know.
So rough.
After being fired from the sheriff's office, Calkins went to work for UPS. In 2013, he quit after causing a bit of a scene. When his boss called Calkins out for a jammed conveyor belt, he started to yell at his boss and then yelled at everyone around, screaming, "Fuck you," to everyone in his path. He was then taken to an office where he simply wrote down, "I quit," and walked out. To this day, Calkins is on investigators' radar. So when he and his wife sold their home in 2016, they saw an opportunity to check things out without worrying about a warrant. All they had to do was ask the new occupants for permission, and the house was searched, as was the property. Cadaver dogs were brought in, but they didn't find anything. An oddly placed concrete slab, hello Ward Weaver, led to the yard being dug up, but there were no findings. All that was sent to a lab was some electrical cord and pieces of black plastic. In the lab, it was found those things were too damaged to be tested, and they wouldn't have had DNA on them anyway.
Wow.
Stephen Henry Calkins was born in Illinois, but now has retreated to Iowa. He grew up on a farm in a Baptist home. Becoming a security guard, he moved to Florida in 1987. He was a bit of a nobody at home, but once he moved to Florida and became a cop, he became a hero. In 1996, he saved a man with CPR. Later that year, he earned an award for helping to lift up a truck that had pinned a man under it. On another occasion, Calkins and his partner approached a home regarding a domestic violence call. When they arrived, a man came out of the front door wielding a machete. They were able to get the machete without using lethal force. His partner later said, "I was like, dude, you could have killed him. You had the right to shoot and kill him." And he said, "I know. I commended him. I was like, man, you've got nerves of steel." And I was like, any other deputy would have blown him away. While that partner was impressed with Calkins' restraint in that moment, in another, while talking with CNN, he randomly said, "Do I think that Steve Calkins is racist? Yeah, I think he disliked Mexicans and I think he disliked blacks." As CNN put it, that statement was blurted out. They had not asked him his thoughts on Calkins or racism.
He just wanted to get it out
there. He just needed to say it.
Good for him.
But now that they were on that subject, the man continued. Asked what made Calkins really angry, he said, "It was these Mexicans or blacks that were uninsured or driving with no license." He then specified it wasn't necessarily about race, just that, quote, anybody that had no driver's license or no insurance pissed him off. CNN then asked him if he thought Felipe or Terrence were still alive. "Do I think they're alive? No, I think they're dead. And do I think Steve might have been involved in it? Good possibility. Is there evidence? No. Why? Because they never arrested him. I tell you, if Steve was capable and did do it, he would definitely make sure the body would never be found. Could he be a hidden monster inside? Yeah, he could be." Doug Turner, the former patrol partner and investigator of Steve Calkins, said, quote, "And it's like, do you think Steve did it? You know, that's the big lingering question. And, you know, whenever I'm asked, I'm like, I don't know. And I'm always like, well, you know, if he did, where's the bodies?" Terrence was only 27, and though he had four children and a bit of a rough history, there was so much life ahead of him. He loved to read about Socrates. He was working two jobs to make his dreams come true. He was his mother's only son. He liked to keep up appearances, even being so extra as to iron t-shirts. And it was because of his legal history, including a DUI and child support issues and a robbery, which he spent 11 months in jail for, that he decided to leave his home of Tennessee and move south to Florida to be near his mother. They were so close, he spoke to his mother at least once a day. The last thing he had said to her was, "I'll see you later, Mama." Now she just wants to bring her son, her friend, home to rest. Felipe loved basketball and soccer. He had four brothers and had been in Florida for 3 years, working fields and construction as an undocumented immigrant, sending money home to his parents, fiance, and two-year-old daughter in Mexico. Like Terrence, he was close with his family, calling his parents in Oaxaca often. He was polite, quiet, a homebody. His brother said, his dreams were to get ahead, to have a home where he lived with his family. A friend of Felipe's family told CNN, he didn't deserve to be disappeared in this way. It isn't right that he hasn't been found after so many years and we don't know what happened to him. As his parents say, if we find his remains, we can give him a Christian burial so we have somewhere to cry and pray for him. But in this case, there isn't anywhere and there isn't any way to do that. Everything is in limbo and we are never going to know what happened. The FBI sent a letter to Calkins asking him to appear in front of a federal grand jury. He declined. And I, for one, did not know that you could just say no thanks to the FBI, but good to know. The biggest issue is that without the bodies, there is no proof of a crime having even taken place, let alone proving someone was responsible for the crime. As recently as last spring, CNN attempted to get in contact with the now 69-year-old Calkins. He declined phone calls and letters. In their research, CNN came to possess some audio recordings from the investigations. This was not long after he told the investigators how polite and nice the young men were. It appears he may have thought the recorder was off because he then starts to bitch. He was mad he was being investigated, mad he had to talk about any of it. He treated the questioning like he was being arrested and he even asked for representation. He defended himself, saying that maybe he broke some rules, but he didn't break any laws. And he ended all of this by saying, quote, I'm not going to get drugged through the mud no more because a couple of scumbags are missing. And there we have his true colors. Stephen Calkins is 69 years old, living in Iowa, just in case he's your neighbor, and he is still considered a person of interest surrounding the disappearances of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams. Even the sheriff admitted that every time they walk through the case, the facts bring them back to Stephen Calkins. If you have any information regarding the disappearances of Felipe Santos and or Terrence Williams back in 2003 and 2004 from Naples, Florida, you are asked to call the sheriff's office. But since they're the ones who kind of got everyone in this mess, I would suggest reaching out to tips.fbi.gov. Now, the big thing for me that everyone kept saying is motive. He didn't have the motive. He didn't have the motive. And I so struggle to understand how police, the people who see the worst of humanity every day, who have seen horrible things happen and actual senseless crimes based off the smallest things, you're telling me as a cop you've never dealt with someone getting in a fight or getting murdered because of a chicken nugget or something? Mm. And so they can't imagine someone as an officer who's maybe feeling burnt out, frustrated by the system, angered by certain laws, especially being broken. And he was armed not just with an actual weapon, but with authority. So there's your motive. You know, I've talked before about how I feel about DUI issues because I've been personally affected. I feel the same way with insurance. I have an insane insurance plan for my car because I have been hit so many times by uninsured drivers. And if that's the thing that upsets you, and you're in the middle of nowhere, there's your motive. Mm-hmm. It seems very silly to me that that's the hang up for some people.
Yeah. Also, have we established like a motive could be anything?
Exactly.
These days? Look at the cases we cover.
You're telling me there's not a cop somewhere who was a serial killer because he hated certain criminals? It seems very believable. And the other thing that people that I've read and I already shared of, oh, we checked his patrol area, we checked that. You're telling me that not finding the bodies makes it that much more likely it wasn't him?
Yeah.
No way. You know he knows every dark corner. He knows where people search and don't search. who knows what kind of agreements there are between the
cops. Was his ammunition checked?
That is a wonderful question that did not cross my mind.
Those are like meticulously counted in most police departments.
I bet they didn't. Because
they sound podunk, if I'm honest. Is that a rude word to say? I still use it, but.
Yeah, I don't know if that goes on the naughty list, but yes, it's. And you're just taking him at his word. And it took how long just to get the brother's initial report regarding Felipe? And so you're that far behind, and that's not going to cross your mind to do. Or they don't want to.
I hate this case.
It's very frustrating. I just think he, of all people, is going to know a swampy area. The car doesn't matter because you had the guy in the back seat. You ask him to get out of the car and walk 10 paces and shoot him in the back of the head and drive off.
Yeah, I wonder if his ammunition was checked. Even if it was, that doesn't mean he didn't
He
bring
could have
his
had
own.
A personal, exactly.
Yeah, to replace it or whatever.
Yeah. And to go from, not that he was a prolific arrester, you know, he wasn't known for constantly bringing people in. But to suddenly drop to zero for a couple of years, and in that time, at least two people go missing. Who knows who else that he pulled up on? So sex workers, houseless people.
The thoughts I had when you were doing that, especially with the signature issue, I wonder, was he trafficking them? Like, did he have a deal with someone else? Because men are trafficked too.
That's
true. Not really talked about, but you can take
And these guys were
work.
Doing hard labor.
Exactly.
And so
they would be useful to people in the trafficking industry, which it is an industry, like, make no mistake.
That's a very good point too. Yeah, because my mind just went to, here's a frustrated guy who is in this job and he's got this weird sense of power and he has had it with these people. And he thinks he can just get away with
it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would assume he killed them, but that did cross my mind.
I think that is a totally valid point. And
it would explain the signature issue.
Right.
Also, why there's no bodies.
Yeah. No, I think that's a totally valid point. You're in Florida. I don't know for sure where Naples is as far as water location, but you're not far from the water anywhere in Florida. To meet up with someone.
Put
because,
them on a boat, get them out of the country.
That was the whole scandal surrounding the World Cup because it was literally built by trafficked people that were actually enslaved and forced to build it. And a lot of people died. So, yeah, the idea of two probably in pretty good shape, or at least they know that kind of work. That's a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, if I were investigating it, I'd be looking at his contacts and who's in his phone, who he's talking to.
And maybe that's part of the Circle K, is he's got some dude he meets up with or something.
I mean, not to be a conspiracy theorist.
No, I think I think there's a difference between what could have possibly happened as opposed to just filling in the blanks and guessing. Yeah.
I have to imagine this was looked at, that these, like, looking at his phone records at the time they were missing, for instance.
Yeah. And it's really hard to trust his own coworkers.
That is true.
To have been thorough. Did they look at everything, or did they only look for the Circle K?
If the FBI came in, I would assume that's what they would take. But somebody who's into trafficking is going to have a throwaway phone anyway, so it wouldn't matter.
Yeah. No, I think that, and again, it just goes to show motive. It doesn't take anything to have a motive. I was in a bad mood. They got in my way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I snapped. I was burnt out. They spoke to me wrong. They were disrespectful. It doesn't take much. No. So
that was a depressing one. Thanks for
as usual.
Another feel good.
That's right. That's what I'm here for.
So lessons learned. It only took 25 times.
On October 1st, 2003, just pre-months thrier. Bajuka Go.
What the?
He was trying to say Bazooka Joe gum last night, and he goes, Bajuka Go.
Isn't the brain so weird?
The brain is a separate entity, I've decided.
There is a girl.
I am not responsible for my brain. Hoping to help arrange for the bail for the brothers.
Bail for brothers.
That's right. Hey, we're the Bail Brothers. Come on down, get your bail bonds with Bail Brothers.
Bail Brothers.
Right here in Nashville.
Get your bales of hay and your...
Oh, that's fun.
Christian Bale posters.
And bail for jail. That's fun. Only bales here. After Coastland Toy... after Coastland Towing. I did all these other tricky words.
Is this guy calling a tow company minutes after finding a car?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, after he's moved it.
But it's going to be towed and then wrecked?
Well, I think wrecker just means a tow truck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was saying that's quite a leap.
Well, and it's also so fast. How many... How often do you see cars on the side of the road for two, three days?
Usually they give them a grace period.
Your car.
My car's been on the curb for 2 years, just sitting there.
I always wonder when I pull up, has it been moved?
Not yet. Although my dad will cancel the wedding.
Your dad will cancel
the wedding? Yeah, he said, he goes, he doesn't have to he doesn't have to ask permission, but that car better be gone. It'll happen. Oh, yeah, you got to order that those little animals. Remember, you were going to make a dowry set?
Yes, I'm going to make a
diorama. A diorama
diary. Diorama.
Is so funny.
with some sheep and some goats.
Oh,
and,
my God. Yeah. My dad would bushels greatly appreciate that. So if I ever find a mate, make sure to let them know they should do the same thing, because my dad would die.
And I'll prepare a report for it, too. I'll talk about all the animals.
Oh, my gosh, please.
What they're worth.
In this culture, it's believed.
Yeah, I'll do ancient Mesoamerican cultures.
I spent 4 gold coins on this mountain goat. Did not have... Hello?
Okay, but she's talking about a specific person.
Well, I'm just having a little fun over here.
And you know I'm going to make it that word and be all confused. You know I'm a simple mind.
And you know
how stupid I am. Oh, and you can't say funny words.
You know,
I'll get so confused.
You know, joke. No.
No joking here.
No joking.
Very serious. Only.
No. Gang a bang.
Arbitrator. When his boss called Calkins. When his boss called Calkins out for.
Cock and balls were out.
Cock and balls.
You say conveyor belt?
Mm-hmm.
What?
He was probably at the facility.
What facility?
UPS.
UPS.
I wasn't listening.
Yeah, clearly.
Of course you weren't. So you thought interrupting to ask questions?
Who's on a conveyor belt? Who went? They put their luggage there?
Never mind!
All that was sent to a lab was some electrical cord and pieces of black pap. Oh my God. But now that they were on that subject,
Bill.
What?
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Murder in the Rain is a Cascade Media production, written, hosted, and edited by Josh McCullough, Emily Rowney, and Alicia Holland. Feel free to email us at murderintherain@gmail.com or through our website, murderintherain.com. For as little as $1 a month, you can subscribe on Patreon to get exclusive access to ad-free and older episodes. For only $5, you can access Patreon-exclusive episodes and content. For more of us, be sure to follow on all the socials, listen to Josh and Alicia on their other show, Always Be My Sisters, and follow Emily on TikTok at @M_murderinTheRain. And suck my balls.